speaking of the energy, I feel like this is actually a very good segue because, yes, I worked in Bangladesh and I'm actually doing my doctoral dissertation on the predecessor to the National Nutrition Program that was just mentioned, the BINP, the Bangladesh Integrated Nutrition Project, and using very similar data to which you've described. I have several segues here. Second, the reason I am presenting and not my colleague Lorraine Cordero is that she is about to deliver her second child. So she figured I think the airlines would not have allowed her to fly down from Boston. And that links to the whole discussion of breastfeeding. And finally, this presentation is really about, let me put it into slide presentation mode, is really about measurement also, and that's the focus of it. Lorraine's work for her doctoral dissertation, which she has now earned, and she's working on taking care of her children at the moment. But she is from Tanzania, and so was very interested in conducting research in her own country. The focus of this particular article is looking at household food security and nutritional status. We know that household food security is a predictor of nutritional status. The key is to figure out how you're measuring household food security and then how you might be able to address both, in fact. By improving household food security, how might you improve nutritional status? She put this in here. It's a little overwhelming. In any case, it's the abstract. We've worked on this together. I didn't want to make too many decisions to go against what hers was, but it's a little overwhelming. Key words here are that this is focusing on household food security, its relationship to poor nutritional status, nutritional status, and trying to look at different measures of household food security. Tanzania is in eastern sub-Saharan Africa. The focus of this research is in Kolosa District, which is actually in the west, in the east of Tanzania, as you can see on the bottom left map. But Kolosa is in sort of the western part of that particular region. But more importantly, it's in the east of Tanzania. It's one of the largest districts of Tanzania. And I asked Lorraine why this particular area had been selected. She explained that, in fact, it's a very diverse region. So this particular study didn't have the funds or the time to do a national level survey. So the focus was really on this one area, which is quite diverse ethnically. It's very large, and it's largely agricultural. So it's to some extent representative of the country. Of course, she's not making generalizations nationally, but it's useful in that respect. So the focus, as Rose mentioned, is adolescence, really. Lorraine was very interested in looking at adolescence and adolescent nutrition. It's a very neglected area, in part because it's difficult to measure nutritional status of adolescents because of puberty and how that affects nutritional status. Adolescents are defined as persons aged 10 to 19 years, according to the WHO. Over 20% of the world's population is, I'm just realizing this isn't the most updated version, but I apologize if there are small errors here. Over 20% of the world's population are considered adolescents. 85% of those live in developing countries. And 25% of Tanzania's population, in fact, actually, the actual statistic is 23.4% of Tanzania's population are adolescents. Adolescence is a time of experiential learning. It's a particularly vulnerable time. You're vulnerable to different environmental factors. You're exposed to, you're less sheltered as you approach adolescence, more likely to be in the workforce. And adolescence really is an optimal time to establish healthy behaviors. In sub-Saharan Africa, youth are projected to comprise 33% of the total population in 2025. Undernutrition affects between 15 to 29% of adolescents. They comprise more than 50% of new HIV infections. Food security remains one of the continent's most persistent challenges to economic growth, particularly as it relates to undernutrition, I'd say. Oh, this is a very old version. That's very odd. Okay. research has been done on the relationship between food insecurity and adolescent nutritional status. In the U.S., there links have been shown between food insecurity and obesity. Food insecurity is negatively associated with children's BMI and household food supplies, but not with children's food intakes. Household food insecurity or insufficiency has been associated with poor child health in the U.S. with increased health risk, particularly for stomach aches. But in international, in developing regions, developing countries, this is really one of the first studies of this kind, looking at food insecurity among adolescents. To define some of the terms, household food security in general exists when all people at all times have physical and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food to meet their dietary needs and food preferences for an active and healthy life. This is according to the World, it's a definition probably many of us are now familiar with. It's the World Food Summit 1996 definition. I'll have to walk you through some of the graphs that I've included that are not going to be in this version. So some of the other definitions. Measures of household food security that are often used include caloric adequacy. So this is based on a household dietary recall, 24-hour recall, asking the primary food preparer what was consumed by the entire household. And then based on the number of household members, determining adult equivalents. So that can be a continuous variable of household adequacy per adult equivalent, or a cutoff is often established at the 80% mark. So the households that meet at least 80% of the dietary adequacy per adult equivalent. Another measure that's often used is the household dietary diversity score. And this is asking, in this case, it was defined based on the 24-hour recall. Sometimes dietary diversity scores are based on a week-long recall, a seven-day recall, the number of times you ate a certain food group. In this case, Lorraine used the same data from the 24-hour recall and created a dietary diversity score for that household, so the number of food groups that were consumed by the household. And coping strategies index is another measure that's often used. This asks about the number of different coping strategies that were used in the last year by the household. And the more strategies you've used, the worse off you would be defined as. I think that's all I can say about that. I'm trying to cruise along here. Body mass index was used for undernutrition. For adults, this has already been mentioned in this panel here. Body mass index is used as is, as weight in kg over height in meters squared. For adolescents, this needs to be adjusted for age and also sex. And the way we define undernourished adolescents is under the fifth percentile for age and sex. So BMI is adjusted for age and sex according to the reference population. The primary research question that's going to be addressed in this article or in this presentation what factors are associated with adolescent nutrition in Tanzania, particularly which measures of household food security. The hypothesis was that household food insecurity is independently associated with nutrition among adolescents, even after controlling for age, gender, orphan status, puberty, hygiene practices, morbidity, physical activity, and socioeconomic status. So a lot of variables were controlled for in the study, which is useful for really determining if household food security matters in terms of nutrition. This was a cross-sectional study, so it was just one time point. We're not looking at the impact of a particular project, as some of these others have been doing. Data were collected from January to March of 2004, which is the lean season. It's the season when there's more malnutrition observed, when people are going without food. With that said, BMI is the measure is perhaps not going to necessarily reflect this lean season quite as much. What is important, because that's more of a chronic status. What is important from using this lean time to measure food security is it tells us that during this hard time, are the households suffering from food insecurity? And this is actually a common practice for measuring food insecurity, is using the lean period. 30 villages were randomly selected using probability proportion to size. This is out of 161 villages in Colosa District. Then adolescents were randomly selected following simple random sampling. This was based on a census of adolescents. The unit of analysis for the overall research that Lorraine conducted were adolescents in general, from age 10 to 19. For this particular research, the focus was never married adolescents. Data analysis was done using SPSS version 14. Prevalence estimates and contingency tables were run. Bivariate and correlational analysis were conducted, specifically looking at undernutrition. So among the undernourished, the rates of food security and measures of socioeconomic status. And then logistic regression was used to test for associations between undernutrition and each of the four different household security measures. So this is a way of seeing if the different measures of food security really do affect nutritional status, if they're significant predictors of nutritional status. In addition, the logistic regressions were used to assess whether or not food insecurity affected nutritional status through diminished health. So in other words, we're looking at morbidity status of these adolescents. This is where things change a lot. So one slide that's not presented, but it is presented, but it's a little bit harder to read. So household caloric intake, this first circle that you see, 46.8% of households were below the 80% mark. So about 47% of households did not meet 80% of the household caloric requirement per adult equivalent. Only 37% of households only consumed between 1 to 3 food groups. So these would be our food insecure. And in terms of coping strategies, if you looked at the highest amount, there's 17.8%. We're using seven or more coping strategies. And if you total the last two groups, we see about 49%. That's right, 48% of households were using at least 4 strategies for coping. So coping in hard times of not having food. The coping strategies, I'm not sure if people are familiar with it, but ask if you skipped meals, if you've had to consume foods that are less socially desirable or desirable in terms of what you want to eat. And I must admit, I don't know all the questions that are on the list, but those are the types of questions that's asked, things you've had to do to sort of make do. Uh, 70.4% of adolescents were considered morbid, but that is at least one symptom of morbidity, of illness, which, as I was discussing with Lorraine, and perhaps that could be refined, and it could be maybe at least two experiences of illness. But that was the definition she used here. Nutritional status, as I mentioned before, underweight was below the 5th percentile of BMI for age and gender. So 21% were considered undernourished. So the bivariate analysis, this is where I had a couple of graphs to show that would illustrate this graphically and be a little bit more exciting. But one of the things we noticed was that between males and females, males had 25.4% were undernourished, whereas females were 15.7%. This may likely be due to maturation and pubertal development. So, and again, as I was mentioning before, logistic regression controlled for both pubertal status and age. And gender, of course. So we'll control for that when we're really looking at the different measures. No association was observed between morbidity and nutritional status. That might be, as I was mentioning before, due to how morbidity was defined. Such a high percentage were considered morbid that it might not be as important here. I had another slide here that looked at undernutrition and caloric intake per adult equivalent. 24.5% of households which had inadequate intake had undernutrition. Of those adolescents were undernourished. 17.4% of the households with adequate intake were undernourished. So 17.4 versus 24.5, and it was a statistically significant difference. Jumping along. So this is the real crux of the presentation, and so I'm winding it down, which is good for time. What this shows us here, and there are a couple of little red circles also, is that undernutrition was significantly and negatively associated with household food security insecurity after adjusting for potential confounding variables. In terms of household caloric adequacy, I should explain, this always throws me off personally. I'm not sure how many in the audience are statisticians, but what are presented here are log odds, the coefficient or log odds. So they're a little bit hard to interpret. The circles are showing that they're statistically significant. So the measures that are statistically significant, so in other words, they are significant predictors of undernutrition, are household caloric requirements per adult equivalent. Household met 80%, so that's a binary variable for they met or did not meet the caloric requirements. And household dietary diversity score. Coping strategies wasn't a significant predictor of undernutrition. So this slide, I think, is important largely for looking at what's statistically significant. What is a significant predictor after you've held constant gender, age, I'll tell you the list, age, gender, orphan status, pubertal status, poor hygiene practices, physical activity levels, morbidity, socioeconomic status, and number of household members. So after holding all those things constant, these were still significant. The important conclusions from this are that for every unit increase in household caloric adequacy, the odds of being well-nourished increased by 9%. In terms of dietary diversity score, the consumption of every one additional food group at the household level increased the odds of an adolescent being well-nourished by 18% after controlling for all other covariates in the model. So these are particularly, I think they're useful findings for programmatic decisions about where you focus your energies and how we should focus our energies in terms of improving nutritional status in adolescents. Food insecurity is significantly and negatively associated with adolescent nutritional status. Household dietary diversity is an acceptable and useful indicator of food security and a strong determinant of adolescent nutrition. The reason that statement there is particularly useful is because it means that we don't necessarily have to always focus on the adolescents. We can make some assertions that if we measure dietary diversity at the household level, we can say it's most likely that the adolescents also will be undernourished. If in the household, if the dietary diversity is very low, it's going to be a problem. If we increase dietary diversity, we're likely to also increase the nutritional status of adolescents. Finally, household dietary diversity might be really, this is sort of underlying what I just said, one of the most important, most practical indicators for food security in terms of how we design our programs. The conclusion that Lorraine and her committee and I fully agree with is that simple strategies focused on increasing household caloric intake and improving dietary diversity among the most vulnerable households could improve the nutritional health of young people, even when they are not the intended beneficiaries of food aid and nutrition education strategies. I should just mention that funding came from UNICEF Tanzania, Tufts University, Helen Brownstein Scholarship Award, and Ellen and Ronald Block Foundation School.